Out on the street in the multicultural jungle, the animals are always hunting. Hunting for prey that are unaware that they are being hunted. The fake news media has kept the public in the dark for decades. While you stare into your cell phone, you may be caught unaware and find your clothes soaked with your own blood. It only takes a second for the beasts to strike. You thought to yourself, these are my brothers and sisters. They would never harm me, because of course, I would never harm them. This kind of logic can often get you into trouble in the city that's really a jungle. Maybe if we just try to understand them, this will change in time. But it won't. But time for you is running out quickly. You are not safe at all. You just think you are. As you walk through the alley, there are five beasts that are keeping an eye on you. And if it wasn't for the other people in the alley this time, you would have been an easy target for the taking. Cold, dark, and dreary images taint the sidewalks, and the sound of footsteps behind you are never considered a threat. Yet many have died this way. Never relax around beasts of this jungle, or you may make your mother a sad woman. This has been a warning from EurofolkRadio.com. You're listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and I'm your host. Greetings to all of you wherever you are in the world, however you're listening. And of course, you're listening to the Eurofolk Radio Network here at EurofolkRadio.com. Well, we've been learning a lot in the mud, haven't we? We've been trudging through the mud. The Talmud. And it's not very pretty, is it? The Jewish mind is twisted. It's perverted. It's corrupt. It's lascivious. It's disgusting. It's demon-filled. Oh, there's more in the mud than we know about. Now, before I go into the mud and drag you along with me, I was going to read from this little quick article on Michael's show because it had to do with what he was doing. But I want to show you the techniques of this article. Now, this could be the same thing if it said ex-CIA officer or ex-FBI or ex-MI5, there's no such thing as ex, number one. They're still in it. Once you're in, you're in. Because if you're out, there's one way out, and that's by the gun. This one is called What I've Learned as a Freemason and Why I Left the Order. Yeah. Where do you get a load of this? You have to pay attention. You have to be able to read between the lines. So the fellow says, I joined Freemasonry out of a deep-seated yearning for truth and mystery. He wasn't just looking for the truth. He was looking for mystery. That yearning is something some people are just born with and others aren't, he says. Get it? He's a special one that's born with this yearning for truth and mystery. Personally, I had a hunch that the allegories of Freemasonry were based on ancient astrolatry, whatever that is, astrolatry, whatever that is. I mean, he's so smart, I'm sure he knows exactly what it is. Not to be confused with astrology. In other words, the allegories of Freemasonry are a play on the ancient mysteries about, get this, light, the sun, overcoming darkness. Remember what I said? Now, this is good. You have to be paying attention now. Let me read that little bit again. In other words, the allegories of Freemasonry are a play on the ancient mysteries about light, the sun, overcoming darkness. Now, where is the darkness in the lodge? It's in the north side of the lodge. And where is the light in the lodge? Why, it's Lucifer. So listen again. The allegories of Freemasonry are a play on the ancient mysteries about Lucifer overcoming darkness. Yahweh, God. I couldn't just read and wonder about it, he says, though. I wanted to confirm it for myself by becoming a Freemason. After years of studying it and becoming a 32-degree Mason, I'm comfortable asserting that to be true and feel that I have confirmed my hunch. Now, understand what is said right there. He became a 32-degree Mason, and he says he's comfortable asserting that to be true, that it is about light overcoming darkness. Only the light they're talking about isn't Yahweh's light. You understand? Yahweh's the darkness in this case. So he's comfortable with that, asserting that to be true, and feels that it confirmed, he has confirmed his hunch. Now, we know that he knows what the story is because he's a 32-degree Mason, and at the 30th degree, they begin telling them that Lucifer is the god of Freemasonry. So he's comfortable that the light, these ancient mysteries, talk about the light overcoming darkness. Get it? What I've learned, he says, there are allegories embedded within the religions of the world, and Freemasonry describes them. These allegories describe scientific truths and philosophic concepts and don't fall within the realm of occult pseudoscience or superstition. The craft, get it? The craft of Freemasonry is, therefore, historical, and scientific reference rather than a cult or religion. This is why Freemasonry asserts that its a, get this, quote unquote, progressive science. Who talks about being progressive? The Jews? The communists? And accepts people of all religions while claiming that it is not a religion itself. Now, we're going to not play stupid here, Mr. Freemasonry, what you've learned. You go to the temple, and the priest is the, known as the a worshipful master. You go to a temple to worship the light of Lucifer and seek the light of Lucifer, but it's not a religion? Oh, I'll give you that it is science too, because it was spawned out of Rosicrucianism, which Rosicrucians were the first scientists underground doing the science that was forbidden by God, that is against Yahweh himself. Yes, much of science is opposed to the Father in heaven. For instance, when you see the story of Frankenstein, you know that the Father does not want anybody doing that kind of stuff, right? This Franken-science, we can call it, is forbidden. It's an abomination. It is man trying to become God, play God. That's what Frankenstein science is. Frankenstein science. See? It's man in the white coat religion of science or medical. It was actually both at that point. Creating a man out of several body parts and bringing him to life. That's man becoming God when he can create life, correct? That's the promise that the devil gave to Eve in the garden, that she could become as gods, knowing good and evil. That's the intellect that the Freemasons have shown that they have eaten of. That's why they wear their little apron covering their genital area, because they're telling you something. No, they're not just telling you that they have sex with goats. They're telling you many things with that apron. Now, I happen to know that Freemasonry is a religion because most of the biggest Freemasons that have written books all say that it is. They also say it's a science. But then again, science is a religion. We're playing stupid here, Mr. Freemason. And I could hear, if I could see it now on the comments on this video, they'll be trying to say, oh, that's not true. Freemasonry is not a religion. We just go to the temple and worship the worship of a master and seek light from Lucifer as our God. But it's not a religion. No, 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 no. It's not one of the devil's churches. One of the churches that crafts the traitors of our race. Like this fellow here. You see, when they tell you I've quit being a Freemason, that doesn't mean he doesn't ascribe to all of its tenets and all that stuff. That doesn't mean that he's no longer full of demons that he acquired through the degrees. Let's not play stupid. I mean, really, I ain't the most intelligent person on the planet, but let's keep it real, right? Listen to this one. You're going to love this one. Is there any conspiracy? Now, what do you think he's going to say, huh? Of course there's not, right? Let's see what he says, though. A handful of misconceptions, scandals, and hoaxes have made people suspicious of Freemasonry. See, he's defending something here. He's pretending he's an ex-Freemason, but what he's doing in this article is promoting Freemasonry and lying a lot. Consequently, a lot of conspiracy theories have been grown around that suspicion. From everything I've witnessed as a Freemason, there is no grand conspiracy. Oh, no. Though the whole notion that the so-called Illuminati or Freemasons are behind everything is absurd. And intellectually lazy. Let's say that again. Let me give you this sentence, and I want you to swallow the camel. Don't strain at the gnat now. The whole notion that the so-called Illuminati, in other words, there's no such thing as the Illuminati. There's no such thing as a Jewish-run Freemasonry. There's no such thing as a secret society that's within a secret society. One is hidden and one is shown. No, of course not. The so-called Illuminati or Freemasons are behind everything is absurd. That notion is absurd and intellectually lazy. See, because if you studied into it, you'd know that the Freemasons they have a Shriners Hospital they give to the burnt children. See, after they tell you to give your children over to Moloch and he gets burned or she gets burned in the fire, then they help with their little burn centers. And that's supposed to make everything okay, and that wipes out all the negative. You see, there's your dualistic equilibrium again. See, these people don't realize that once you know what the story is with Freemasonry, you can't lie your way out of it, pal. You can't lie your way out of it. I understand it because Yahweh allowed me to understand it. Not because I'm smart. Not because I'm a genius. He allowed me to see. And there's not a dang thing you can do about it, sonny boy. Life isn't that simple, and corruption of the heart and mind aren't exclusive to any one institution. Oh, that's true. But are simply a part of humanity. So what is a part of humanity? Corruption? Isn't that what Saul Alinsky told us? Don't worry about being corrupt. It's just part of the game. If you have to be a corrupt politician to get the ends that you need, then that justifies the means of corruption. And that's exactly what the Freemasons do as well. They go by that precept. The ends justify the means. Oh, yes, they do. Don't try to tell me they don't now. I already know. You're just wasting your time commenting. Wasting your time. Freemasonry is just a fraternity. And it's best suited for nerds, not evildoers. If you're looking for evildoers, investigate the misconduct of corporations and the military-industrial complex. Oh, dear friend, it's just a fraternity. You mean you old gentlemen just go down there, fill yourselves up with demons and play cards? Is that what happens? And drink coffee and get a little nerdy? You don't do any evil, right? You don't go out onto the streets and cause revolutions like you did in France. You don't do it. You're honest people. Good people, right? Just a fraternity. It's a brotherhood. Brotherhood. Get it? Brotherhood. Freemasonry. You are anything but free in Freemasonry. You are locked into the devil, and the devil is locked into you. Freemasonry is a lie. You're not free. You're a traitor to your race, to your country, to the Father in heaven, and to your family. Don't play Don't waste your time commenting, because I'm not going to listen to it. I know what the story is. I've read your books. Are there any secrets? What about the hidden life in Freemasonry? Is that a secret? Are you out, Mr. Freemason, telling everybody about how when you go up the ladder that you're taking on spirits that attach themselves to you? Hundreds of years ago, Freemasonry was secretive out of a necessity to avoid persecution, and therefore contained secrets relative to its potential persecution. You believe that, dear listener, don't you? In today's world, Freemasonry doesn't really have any secrets. Oh, no, not at all. How about the fact that you've gone over there to South Africa and you've done everything you can to kill the Boers? Huh? By assuming their identity as Afrikaners. Huh? How about the fact that you're out marching in the Brexit marches, and that you've been part of every single coup d'etat, every single revolution that the world has known? How about that secret? There are some things you won't find online, but there aren't any real secrets. He's not lying, is he? In fact, I believe Morals and Dogma by Albert Pike and Stellar Theology and Masonic Astronomy by Robert Hewitt Brown cover most of it. Those two books describe practically everything there is to know about the esoteric side of Freemasonry. And dear fellow, I've read that for the people too. Not the whole book. Plenty, much of it. Nice chunks of it so that they could see. Remember my show called A Peek at Pike? And dear Freemasonic liar, why did Hitler want to kick you out of Germany? And when he did, the health of Germany increased. Was there any secrets there? So now here's why he left Freemasonry. Why I left Freemasonry. I left Freemasonry because it's an outdated order, and it's long overdue for serious changes. Hundreds of years ago, the teachings of Freemasonry were revolutionary and progressive, but today they are far from it. In fact, you could argue that many of the regulations are counterproductive to progression and equality. For example, women still aren't allowed into the Blue Lodge Freemasonry in many areas. Neither are African Americans. Are you listening? Are you hearing me, ladies and gentlemen? Are you hearing? I can't condone such regulations because I'm a true, I'm going to add a little in. I'm a true social justice warrior. Yes, I'm equal with goat pumpers. I'm equal with street crappers. I'm equal with, there's no such thing as African Americans, Freemason. There's no such thing as women being equal with men either. Of course, Freemasonry isn't an intentionally racist or sexist institution. But it's behind on the times, and that's the problem. And they're not intentionally racist. No, no, not at all. So if you don't believe women are equal and you don't let women in your lodge, that makes you a racist? That doesn't make any sense. Why aren't you letting the street crappers into your lodge? Why are you just interested in women and Africans? Why aren't you interested in Indians? From India, or Pakistanis. Why don't you get some of those in you? The smell of the lodge will be incredible. You'll love it. Think of all the diversity you could have in that lodge. How about some MS-13? I know you team up with them and with Antifa and everybody, right? Who do you think you're kidding, pal? The problem with Freemasonry. Long gone are the days of famous Freemasons such as Benjamin Franklin, Simon Bolivar, Mark Twain, Oscar Wilde, Andrew Jackson, Voltaire, Winston Churchill, George Washington, etc. The authoritative figures of Freemasonry aren't visionaries and revolutionaries anymore. In fact, Freemasonry itself has become dogmatic and isn't evolving at all. It's not involved with the future of technology and the sciences either. So it's not particular. I thought it was a science. So it's not particularly attractive to progressives and intellectuals, he says. If Freemasonry... I'm serious. Can you believe this, what you're hearing right here? If Freemasonry had lived up to its glory, its lodges would be full of famous scientists, inventors, and visionaries. Instead of its lodges are declining in membership and falling apart. That's because you're being exposed, you filthy, rotten devil traitor. The fate of Freemasonry. Things survive by necessity. And there simply isn't any necessity for Freemasonry. Besides, the Jews would like to argue with that. Besides charity contributions, Freemasonry isn't contributing anything to modern society and is therefore unnecessary, just like you are, Freemason. Unless the authoritative figures of Freemasonry open the floodgates for change, Freemasonry is done for. The only way Freemasonry will survive is if it becomes deeply involved in the future of technology and the sciences. As a Freemason, you're actually told to study the sciences, but most Freemasons don't even study Freemasonry, let alone the sciences. In fact, the reason morals and dogma was replaced by a bridge to the light was because it was deemed a tough read and the majority of candidates couldn't comprehend its complexity. So you had to put a bridge to light, which means affirmative action. I love it. The acceptance of such embarrassingly low standards is why Freemasonry has fallen from its former glory. No, it's fallen because the Father is going to make sure it falls. It's falling because the Jew is falling. It's falling because it's being exposed every day, every night, and in every way. Until it opens itself to change, it's doomed to fail. Isn't that what they say about our country? But look at all the change has done. The change has caused the fail. As someone who once loved and admired the craft, that's disappointing to admit. Yeah, you used to be a Freemason, sure. Well, ladies and gentlemen, did you hear that? Did you enjoy that little lie? Little? These satanic freaks think they've got the world still fooled. But professing to be wise, they became fools, you see. Isn't that what Christ said? Jesus told us that professing to be wise, speaking about the Pharisees. But these also believe that you are the profane. You are ignorant. The public is the mob. That's what the first three degrees are about. The mob, the state, and the church. It's amusing, I must tell you. It's amusing. And these sorry sons of guns ain't fooling anybody practically anymore. You know who they're fooling? Themselves. He's a 32-degree Freemason, and he says, oh, everything's great. I'm comfortable with asserting that that's true, and I feel that I've confirmed my hunch, the hunch that the light will overcome the darkness. Yahweh being the darkness this time. He feels he's right. Well, you're wrong. You ain't going to overcome anything. You've been overcome by the light, the distorted light of Halel. You call him Lucifer. I call him Lucy. I call him all kinds of names. So that's all I really have to say about that article, folks. What do you think? What do you think? Amazing, isn't it? Amazing how our people can lie to themselves and swallow the camel while they strain at the gnat. I can't help, but that is one of the most beautiful sayings that Christ has ever said. Jesus said that, and it rules, man. You strain at a gnat, but you swallow a camel. And boy, that says it all to me. I mean, really, it does say it all. So listen, we'll go to break a little early, and then we'll come back and dig deep in the mud again. Here's a little bit more of some kind of country I like. You know, it's supposed to be funny songs, you know?
The first thing I'm gonna do when I get out is pay a little visit to you and see if we can't sort this whole mess out. The warden said it's what I should do. You sold all my guns and my four-wheel drive. You sold all my decoys and bait. You gave all my ammo and tackle away. And I'm counting down to my freedom date. The first thing I'm gonna do is pay a little visit to you. The first thing I'm gonna do when I get out is pay a little visit to you. The warden said it's what I should do. I'm gonna drop in on you.
Yeehaw! Oh, I love those licks.
She's Satan and a thong. Lord knows she'll do you wrong. If you meet her, you best move along. She's Satan in a thong. Now I've seen wicked and I've seen evil, all kinds of bad and all kinds of people. But I can tell you this bitch takes the cake. Oh, she's pretty as hell and young. Behind her ruby lips lies a serpent's tongue. Hell, I'd just as soon kiss a rattlesnake. She's Satan in a thong. God knows she'll do you wrong. She's Lucifer. Hell, yes, it's her. She's Satan in a thong. Yeah, she looks hot in them cut-off shorts of denim, but her pearly white teeth have got venom in them. Hell, I've been bit a couple of times, it's true. Then she'll whisper, come closer, baby, it's all right. Then wrap them long legs around you, oh so tight. And with her fangs, she'll suck the damn life right out of you. She's Satan in a thong. God knows she'll do you wrong. If you meet her, you best move along. She's Satan in a thong. It's Lucifer, hell yes, it's her. She's Satan in a thong.
Yes, it is. I love it. That's Unknown Henson. And I pretty much love that kind of country music, even though it's joking songs. Those pedal steel guitars, crying guitars get me every time. I absolutely love it. Let's just listen one more time to this other one.
The first thing I'm gonna do when I get out is pay a little visit to you and see if we can't sort this whole mess out. The warden said it's what I should do. You sold all my guns and my four-wheel drive. You sold all my decoys and bait. You gave all my ammo and tackle away. I'm counting down to my freedom date. The first thing I'm gonna do is pay a little visit to you. The first thing I'm gonna do when I get out is pay a little visit to you. The warden said it's what I should do. I'm gonna drop in on you.
Very nice, very nice. And we're back here at the Eurofolk Radio Network here at eurofolkradio.com. Hope you're listening. Hope you're having fun. Hope you're learning. Hope you're not obsessed with me. Hope you can get over it. And so let's jump right into the mud. The Talmud Book of Gittin and Some Health Remedies. This Talmud book is about divorce. Reproduced herein are the title page and part of the introduction. The book also deals with the fate of Christians in hell. Following are also various dog and dung health remedies. And these are all exhibits that you can see when you have the book. They're reproductions from Gittin, folios 69A and 70B, devoted to these dung and dog remedies. Also, almost too fantastic to believe, the privy, demons and privates are mingled in insane array. The funny thing about the horrendous and silly remedies, quote-unquote, of the Talmud Book of Gittin is not the asininity of the remedies themselves, so much as the commentary in English by a British doctor with a string of alleged degrees, which appears in the appendix to the Sansino edition of this Talmud book. He actually attempts to justify and praise these nutty things. The wrong people, it is often said, are in asylums. That's for sure. The appendix is entitled Notes on the Various Remedies Recommended in Folio 68B through 70B by Dr. M. Feldman. I should say alleged Dr. M. Feldman, W.M. Feldman, M.D., F.R.C.P., L.O.N.D., F.A., F.R.A.S., and F.R.S., and F.S., I mean F.O.S., full of For the charms, amulets, incantations, astrological associations, quote-unquote, he finds the benefits of suggestion, quote-unquote, with, quote-unquote, profound effect. And for whatever, he cannot evolve a, quote-unquote, rational physical basis. He invents imagined benefits. He points out that animal excrements, I want you to hear this now, don't drift on me, you ready? This is a doctor who's going to point this out in the Talmud. He points out that, quote unquote, animal excrements as remedial agents are ancient, and we, quote unquote, shall not lightly dismiss the ancient folk remedies, however absurd they may appear. He extols the incantations and lauds these rabbis. These rabbis' knowledge of all the parts of theoretical and practical medicine in which they surpass their contemporaries. Quote, he refers to several works to study the glories of, quote, Talmudic medicine, unquote, in five pages of whitewash, professing to look down upon the probable sneers of the sophisticated but untutored reader, which should include just about everyone except a Talmudist zealot. Use of the Bible for asininity and obscenity. One is enlightened as to Christ's denunciations of the Pharisees as fools and blind, Matthew 23, etc., by the following so-called wisdom of the sages. Adam's words about Eve are cited in the Bible, and Adam said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh," a statement Christ used in his teachings about marriage. But the Jewish Talmud teaches, pay attention, what is meant by the scriptural text, "This is now bones of my bones and flesh of my flesh"? This teaches that Adam had intercourse with every beast and animal, but found no satisfaction until he cohabited with Eve. I'm going to read that again because I know it just passed by you, and this is the Jewish mind I want you to understand now. They're going to interpret what Adam said. Listen very carefully. What is meant by the scriptural text, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh"? This teaches that Adam had intercourse, listen, with every beast and animal, but found no satisfaction until he cohabited with Eve. Yebamoth 63a of the Talmud. David's sixth psalm is a plea by David for forgiveness. Return, O Yahweh, deliver my soul. O save me from for thy mercy's sake. In the grave, who shall give thee thanks? I am weary with my groaning. All the night I make my bed to swim. I water my couch with my tears. Citing the above verse, Psalm 66 and 7, 6 verse 7, the Talmud sages, quote unquote, you know, alleged sages, make this to be the meaning. You ready? Even during David's illness, he fulfilled the conjugal rites of his 18 wives, as it is written. I am weary with my groaning. All the night I make my bed to swim. I water my couch with tears. This is from Sanhedrin 107a of the Talmud. Are you connecting with me? Next, women who are quote-unquote unclean, menstruating, are to remain separate, said Moses, all the days of her issue. And in this verse, Leviticus 15:26, is cited in the Jewish Talmud, which states, listen, quote, that a woman is not regarded as a zabah, Z-A-B-A-H, one with discharge, except during the daytime, because it is written, all the days of her issue. Are you laughing? Are you laughing at these idiots? These are the people that say they got to have a higher IQ than you. See Exhibit 194 from Horaoth 4a of the Talmud. Typical of the Talmud misuse of the Bible for purposes of inventing obscenity and then giving it a biblical coding is the biblical account of Sisera, head of the Canaanite army, who fights all day and is the only man left alive. He flees to the tent of a supposed friend of the Canaanites, Heber the Kenite. Jael, Heber's wife, welcomes him in, but as soon as he falls into exhausted sleep, drives a tent nail through his temple, and he dies. She boasts of this to his pursuing captors. Next, Deborah makes up a song of rejoicing in which she embroiders on a Sisera's actual death in his sleep, and with poetic license sings, "When she had stricken through his temples, at her feet he bowed, he fell, he laid down, at her feet he bowed, he fell, where he bowed, and he fell down dead." The verbs bowed and fell are used three times each, and lay is used once. This makes seven verbs used in this verse. The standard Talmud use of this verse is to indicate it as meaning seven sexual connections. The same biblical verse is used thus about Christ. The words, "at her feet he bowed and fell," are explained as Judges 5:27. This is taken to refer to sexual intercourse. See Sanhedrin 105a through b of the Talmud. This is rehashed in Yebernath, 103a and 103b of the Jewish Talmud. That profligate Sisera had seven sexual connections on the day, for it is said, "Between her feet he sunk, he fell, he lay. At her feet he sunk, he fell, where he sunk, there he fell down dead." With the footnote giving the Talmudic reasoning, each of the expressions, "he sunk" and "he fell," occurs three times, and "he lay" occurs once. The Talmudic book of Nazir. Now listen to this. There's a book called Nazir. Let me spell Nazir for you. See if you can see anything in this. N-A-Z-I-R. The Talmudic book of Nazir, Nazi, reiterates the same biblical misuse for no reason whatever. That wicked wretch Sisera had sevenfold intercourse with Jael at the time, and it says, "At her feet he sunk, he fell, he lay," etc. The word "he sunk," the words "he sunk" and "he fell" occur three times, and the words "he lay" once. The Talmudic book of Horaoth repeats the same obscenity. Now, this should enlighten you. If there's anything you want to do, if you've been cursed by farming and you know that you cannot farm, this is the technique of the Jews. Ready? Farming inferior for Jews. In the course of a terrible prophecy against Tyre, the New York of the ancient world, and, you know, the king of Tyre, get it? King of the Jews, the devil. The king of Tyre, wasn't he known as to be the devil? And it says it was the New York of the ancient world, Tyre. Am I right? And reprobate with sodomy, lesbianism, childbirth, and other abominations is a Bible verse foretelling that, quote, "all that handle the oar, the mariners, and all the pilots of the sea shall come down from their ships, and they shall stand upon the land," unquote. Ezekiel 27:29. The prophecy, including all the details of the preceding chapter, were literally fulfilled by Nebuchadnezzar and Alexander the Great. Nebuchadnezzar pounded down the walls of Tyre, and Alexander made a causeway of the rocks, killing or selling into slavery the inhabitants who had taken refuge on an island offshore. However, the Talmud nullifies and twists these biblical words. And out of the words of foretelling the end of the sea-going trading power coming down from their ships and shall stand upon the land, the Pharisee Talmud sages, you know, quote-unquote sages, alleged sages, state, no occupation is inferior to that of agricultural labor, for it is said they shall come down. If there were no agricultural labor, I wonder how these Jews would have been able to eat. Talmud instructions for the Sabbath. Now, this ought to be good, right? Let me just take a little sip of coffee. I hope you're I hope you're enjoying this revelation, because that's exactly what it is, a revelation of what's really going on in the Jewish mind and culture. No Talmud book illustrates Christ's depictions of the Pharisaism better than the book of Sabbath. He said, "Ye blind guides, which strain at a gnat and swallow a camel." That's Matthew 23:24. "Ye blind guides, which strain at a gnat and swallow a camel." One way to go raving crazy is to study the Talmud book of Sabbath, with its rules on what is or what is not permissible on the Sabbath. Concerning the Sabbath, even the digested laws or Talmud Mishnah in the Shulchan Aruch take up 82 pages of Volume 2, pages 63 through 145. The sum and substance of all of them is a game of subversion. A rule is set up. How many ways are there to get around it and nullify it? That is the problem, leading to almost endless trivia and discussion. Please don't drift. Listen to this. Moving a door key. One gem concerns the weighty problem of the door key, which the Shabbos Goy... Now, I've seen this as Shabbos Goy, Shabbos Goy, Shabbat Goy. It's all the same thing. It means somebody that'll do the work for the Jew on the Sabbath. In other words, that's what the Freemason is, a Shabbat Goy. That's what the politicians in all of our Congress, all of almost every single one of them, are Shabbos or Shabbos Goy. Or a Sabbath Gentile. Is carrying home for you, you know that's a bogus word, Gentile means nation, is carrying home for you so that the Jew is spared that labor. Well, I would say America must be a Sabbath nation, because it's always carrying home for the Jews everything with its military. And the Jew is spared from all that quote-unquote labor. The Talmud rule is that you cannot move goods from one category of property to another, from private or public property, or from what is neither public or private on the Sabbath. Your doorstep is neither public nor private. The street or sidewalk outside the doorstep is public. Your house is inside, your house inside is private. Therefore, says the Talmud, you must have the goy not only insert your key into the lock, but push the door in as otherwise. If you push the door in with the key in it, you would be moving the key from property. Oh, my God. Neither public nor private, the sill, to the inside of the house, private property. You know, there's an old saying about having too much time on one's hands. Listen to this. The Sabbath louse hunt. One who searches his garments and finds a louse shall not crack it, but simply rub it with his fingers and throw it away on the Sabbath. Throwing away lice is not labor. Cracking a louse is to be avoided at all costs, however. What an admission. I told you these people were filthy. They have lice. That's what Zyklon B was all about. Zyklon B gas was to de-louse all the prisoners of the camp. They must have caught it all from these Jews. If the Jew has to tell you about not cracking a louse or a lice, that means the Jew is accustomed to having lice, which means he's unclean and just downright filthy. Listen to this. Sabbath intercourse. The bloody, the sadistic, and the obscene are the darlings of the Talmudic, quote-unquote, synagogue of Satan mentality. The appetite for which is seemingly never sated. I think that means satiated. To illustrate, 8 running pages have been reproduced here on the popular Talmud subjects of blood and intercourse. This discourse concerns whether or not the first intercourse on the Sabbath would constitute Sabbath labor, quote-unquote. It is performed to see if she was a virgin. I mean, is it performed to see if she was a virgin? Is discussed at length, for example. But the rule which governs the dominant Talmud rule of the Sabbath on the subject of labor, namely that an act of injury never ranks as labor, quote-unquote, so if the intent is to injure the wife, the act is permissible. Cuckoo, cuckoo. Can you say cuckoo? The 8th page ends with the thought that intercourse is permitted anyway. Then a new line of needless, senseless, religious, quote-unquote, discussions about women and blood starts in. These long-winded, silly pages of Pharisee, quote-unquote, wisdom are but a sample of the bent of the whole Talmud. Whew! Can you take a deep breath with me right now? Ready? Let's go. Whew! Man. The sickness. No wonder the first mental institution in New York was made for Jews. In Matthew 5:34 through 36, I guess it is, and in Matthew 23:16 through 22, are recorded the lambastings Christ gave to the Pharisees for vowings. Ye blind guides which say, whosoever shall swear by the temple, it is nothing, but whosoever sweareth by the gift that is upon it, he is guilty. Ye fools and blind, for which is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctified the gift? Christ goes on to illustrate Pharisee silliness. Do not swear by anything is the gist of Matthew 5:34's passage. Not by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. One can only appreciate his words after reading hundreds of pages of drivel about vows in the Talmud books of Nazir and Nedarim. The Talmud Mishnah on the heifer and the door is illustrative, not reproduced. The Mishnah opens with the door saying, if the man doesn't open it, and if the heifer saying, if the man does not make it stand up, he must be a Nazir, quote-unquote, a Nazirite to vow, who had vowed not to cut his hair. So maybe it's true that Jesus had long hair. Wasn't he a Nazirite? Or was he not? So, a Nazirite to vow, Nazirite means to vow, was one who had vowed not to cut his hair or drink or eat any product of the grape for a certain time. 3 pages of haranguing Gemara, quote-unquote, following the Talmud, Mishnah, quote-unquote, discuss the fact that the heifer then got up of its own volition. The door is quiet, apparently, for nothing more is said by it. Said by the door? Doors are talking to the Jews? The Jewish school of Shammai holds that since a man did not of his own power force the heifer up, he must be a Nazir, quote-unquote. But the Hillel Jews say that the essence of the vow is the upping of the heifer, which was recumbent, quote-unquote, and is now standing up so the man does not have to be a Nazir. The schools of the Hillel and Shammai were full of flour in the Holy Land when Christ lived, and no doubt that this and other nonsense presently preserved for the Jewish religion existed then. There's no such thing as the Jewish religion. Unless Satanism is the Jewish religion, or the traditions of men are the Jewish religion, because Judaism is not a religion. As I will continue to say over and over, it is a worldwide criminal cartel, a mafia, in the guise of a religion, to take advantage of what being a religion would allow you. Talmud, juvenile birth control, and the two hairs, quote-unquote, test for puberty. I'm not laughing because it's funny. It's just crazy. The Talmud Yebamoth 12b harangues about the ages when female birth control may be exercised, namely from the, quote, age of 11 years and one day until the age of 12 years and one day, unquote. With a child under or over, quote unquote, these ages to, quote, carry on her marital intercourse in the usual manner, unquote. The recommended birth control is to be followed because otherwise the pregnant female might have a second conception, quote unquote, which would make her fetus a sandal, quote unquote, or flat fish, quote unquote. Read the nonsense followed by the two hairs test. Read the asinine harangue in the Talmud, Yebamoth 12b, 13a, about two hairs proving puberty, or not proving it, as the child may have lost the two hairs through childbirth. Also, the calling for the examination by the rabbis. Can you imagine? The rabbis got these Jews bringing their little daughters to them so that they can take all their clothes off and examine them, as if they were doctors. In the Sunsino edition of the Talmud, references made to three similar messes of muck in Kethuboth 36a, Baba Bathra 156a, and Nida 52a of the Talmud. To be unable to tell whether a little girl is as yet adolescent or has borne a child or not by counting two pubic hairs, it's too idiotic to credit to anything except the Talmudic love of sub-sewer subjects. The reprobate mind, quote-unquote, as Paul called it. Quote, who changed the truth of God into a lie, unquote, Romans 1:25 through 28. To deal with unnatural filth and sex matters is the core of Talmudic, quote-unquote, scholarship. Let me read that again. To deal with unnatural filth and sex matters is the core of Talmudic, quote-unquote, scholarship. More Talmudic wisdom, quote-unquote, alleged wisdom, okay? Pretensions of wisdom, quote-unquote, by Talmudic Pharisee sages, which are alleged sages, are perhaps the most incredible. No pompous dissertation seems complete without mention of a privy. Sons of sages and scholars, we read, may enter in and sit down before their father with their backs to the people. When, however, they do not possess the capability of understanding the discourses, they enter in and sit down before their father with their faces toward the public. If he went out to ease himself, he may re-enter and sit down in his place. This applies only to the minor functions of the body. In other words, if he had to relieve himself, you get, or went out to ease himself? Well, I wouldn't be surprised if he just eased himself onto the floor, because we've seen that many times. The Jews used to act like that all the time. You know, they're street crappers too, you know. And they defecate and urinate everywhere. But right now, they've learned to train themselves a little bit to carry on the deception of equality. This applies only to the minor functions of the body, but not to the major functions, since he should have examined himself before. A man should always make a habit of easing himself early in the morning. And, I get the feeling that this is, he's talking about masturbation here rather than urination. Listen to this. And maybe you're going to see the same thing too. A man should always make a habit of easing himself early in the morning and late in the evening in order that there be no need for him to go far. Jewish Talmud remedies, quote-unquote, are foolish to say the least. The above passage from Horaoth 13a and b through b of the Talmud is replete with learning such as, listen, as the olive causes one to forget 70 years of study, so does olive oil restore 70 years of study. Now, there's doublethink for you. I want you to hear this now. You wanted to know where doublethink comes from. Listen to this now. Very carefully, this is a quote. As the olive causes one to forget 70 years of study, so does the olive oil restore 70 years of study. Wine and spices have made me wise. The Talmud alleged sages then dispute whether dipping one or two fingers in salt makes one wise. Whether passing under a bit of a camel or under the camel itself interferes most with mentality. The text then returns to the required protocol of the Nazi. Now, here it is again, only this time it's N-A-S-I. The Nazi head of the Sanhedrin. Hello? So we've seen Nazir, N-A-Z-I-R, and we've seen N-A-S-I, which is a Hebrew word. Listen, the text then returns to the required protocol for the, quote, Nazi head of the Sanhedrin and the head of the Talmud school, the Abeth Din, unquote. And how many rows have to rise in honor when each one enters? The Talmud also has wisdom about eating dates, quote, unquote. They remove three things, dates do, evil thoughts, stress of the bowels, and abdominal trouble, unquote. Abdominal. When I'm so used to saying abomination, when you try to say abdominal, it's a different world, right? So again, they say that dates remove these three things. Not dates when you go out on a date with a girl. Dates that you eat. They remove evil thoughts, stress of the bowels, and abdominal trouble. This leads to a play on words, door, ladder, and bed, where one is fruitful and multiplies on it, quote unquote. Back to the old subjects. This is from Ketubath 10b through 11a of the Talmud. On this same page, you realize that the Bible is so wonderful. The scriptures are so wonderful and full of meaning. And if you were to read this filth, this traditions of men, this garbage that they say the Bible came and was spawned from the Talmud, you would know immediately that there could be no truth in that. There would be no question in your mind that the two have nothing in common whatsoever. That they are diametrically opposed, and that one is an historical book about the race of Adam, and the other is a bunch of meaningless drivel and evil demonology full of crazy rituals, evil thoughts, and nonsense. On this same page is the Mishnah law that a baby girl under 3 years and 1 day old is always reckoned as a virgin. Quote, if they had intercourse before they were 3 years and 1 day old, the hymen would regrow itself. In other words, it's saying the hymen would grow. Do not just the few illustrations above from the Pharisee Talmud show the justness of Christ's excoriations of the Pharisees as full of all uncleanness, quote unquote, their love of the uppermost rooms at feasts, all of their works they do for to be seen of men, full of hypocrisy and iniquity, and illustrating their hair-splitting paraded as wisdom, quote unquote, he called them fools and blind, quote unquote. Virginity on a monetary scale. Oh, my God. You know, I know I don't know it all, and I know there's lots to know, but I will tell you that you think you've heard it all, but just read some of what I'm reading to you. Are you ready for this one? Let me just take a little sip. I want you to just think about the stuff that you've just heard. What do you think about it? Is this, are you equal to these people? Is this how you think? Is this how you taught your children to think? Is this how your husband thinks or your wife thinks? Are you equal to them? Is your scripture equal to their scripture? Or should I say, is their scripture, which isn't scripture at all, equal? Is their holy book, so to speak, equal with your holy book in wisdom and knowledge and truth? I dare say no. As a matter of fact, our scriptures are the primary book on the planet. Top of the heap, fellas. This set of books wasn't even worth writing. The material is so defunct, derogatory, deliberately evil, filthy, disgusting, and vile. Listen to this. Virginity on a monetary scale. You can just imagine. What does that say? What resounds in your mind at this point? Virginity on a monetary scale. Maybe you can buy back a woman's virginity. The Ketubot, Book of the Babylonian Talmud, is supposed to set down rules related to married life. The Ketubah is a contract promising to pay a wife a certain sum of money. If the husband divorces her, which he can do at will, according to the Talmudic doctrine, perhaps urged on by the growing Christian propaganda against divorce. The Hillelite Jewish school stressed this husband's freedom to divorce his wife, even for some culinary deficiency. Or, did you just hear that? The Jews say in the Talmud that you, as a husband, can divorce your wife even for some culinary deficiency. If she cooks or overcooks a cake, or if she forgot a spice, or there was too much salt or too little salt, you could divorce your wife. as Rabbi Akiba taught, because he had found a better-looking woman. The ketubah need not be paid if the wife can be proven to not have been a virgin when married. Well, if you're banging these three-year-old daughters of yours and then they're marrying another Jew, if that even does happen, of course you can prove that they're not virgins. Hence the Jewish custom of groomsmen waiting outside the bridal chamber door for the bloody sheet to be witnessed, proving the wife's virginity. Elaborate cuts of these ketubah appear in the 1943 Universal Jewish Encyclopedia. Now, let me just say something here. If your groomsmen are waiting outside the bridal chamber and you and your so-called wife go in there and she's not a virgin, I would assume that you could just cut a little piece of flesh and douse the sheet with the blood and that would suffice, yes? I wonder how many times that's happened. Chicago physician and hospital owner Dr. A.A. Wemond used to relate to a member of my family about the money he made by putting in false catgut hymens for Jewish girls who were not virgins before they were to be married. Listen again. I mean, how can I not read that again? Seriously. After what I just said to you, too, about them banging their three-year-old little daughters, and they said it would grow back. They said the hymen would grow back if you did that to your daughter before she was three. And a day. Of course, that day makes a whole difference, too. But here they are, a Chicago physician and hospital owner, Dr. A.A. Wemond, used to relate to a member of my family about the money he made by putting in, listen, false catgut hymens for Jewish girls who were not virgins before they were to be married. I know you're laughing. I know you are. It's crazy. These people are nutso. The Talmud price for getting rid of a wife who had been a virgin is 200 zuz, Z-U-Z, quote-unquote, given by the Universal Jewish Encyclopedia as 200 denarii, or about $30. Hey, women, how do you like it? How do you like that? Like your mother told you, go marry a nice Jewish lawyer. You'll be rich for as long as you're useful. But then for about $30, we'll catch you later. Because according to the Talmud, if you're a non-Jew woman and you marry one of these Jews, you're just an animal anyway. But the real truth is that the Jew is the beast of the field, the most subtle beast of the field. But they've turned it around on you. Yeah, go marry a nice, rich, Jewish lawyer and have a couple of snake children, a couple of new abominations that help them to keep on staying alive on the planet. If the wife refuses sexual intercourse, she can be threatened with a reduction of her claims in the ketubah. And this threat can be carried out. Same encyclopedia. If the husband can contend that the wife had not been a virgin, she only gets a mana, quote unquote, or the smallest coin, says the Talmud. You know what the smallest coin is? A dime. You thought it was a penny, right? Unless they're talking about smallest in size. But knowing the Jew, it probably is a penny. All of this talk about blood and virginity is a favorite Talmudic subject, and seemingly endless. They're obsessed with blood and virginity. And as always in the Talmud, in the book of Ketubot, asininity, I don't know if you say asininity or whatever, it means asinine, is combined with filth. For example, the controlling Mishnah, quote-unquote, or overall rule of Folio 61b, doles out by trades the proper number of relations between husband and wife as, quote, men of independence every day, for laborers twice a week, for ass drivers once a week, and for camel drivers once in 30 days, for sailors once in 6 months. Let's catch that again. These are the sexual rules. So the women have to dole out this by the trades, how much they have sex. The proper number of relations between husband and wife as men of independence get it every day. For laborers, they get it twice a week. For ass drivers, once a week. For camel drivers, once in 30 days. And for sailors, once in 6 months. How's that for equality and brotherhood? Huh? I know you're laughing. I mean, why wouldn't you? It is funny, isn't it? It's funny that you thought you were equal with this swill. It's funny that you let this swill make you believe that it was equal with you. And that all the rest of them are equal with you, too. And you strain at the gnat, as I say, the words that they've given you, and you swallow the camel that you are equal with all these people, all the different races of the world, and women, too. Sodomy approved. Let's listen to this one. This is a holy book where sodomy is approved, right? The Talmud being a holy set of books. Sure it is. Sodomy approved. Despite the thunderings and prohibitions of the Bible, sodomy in general, and specifically with little children, dead bodies, neighbors, wives. And that's neighbors' wives in plural, like many neighbors' wives. And one's own wife is permitted by the Talmud. I want you to listen again. I want you to stop what you're doing right now, please. And I want you to listen to this one more time. If you've never listened before and stopped and listened, please listen this time. Despite the thunderings and prohibitions of the Bible, sodomy in general, and specifically with little children, dead bodies, neighbors' wives, in other words, many neighbors, and one's own wife is permitted by the Talmud. The argument for this last is in Nedarim 20b of the Talmud, page 58 of the Sonsino translation. Quote, our sages said, a man may do whatever he pleases with his wife as intercourse. At intercourse. Meat which comes from the abattoir stockyards may be eaten, salted, roasted, cooked, or seethed. So with fish from the fishmonger. A woman came before Rab and complained of her husband's sodomy with her. Rab replied, wherein does it differ from fish? Quite a retort, don't you think, from a holy man and a holy doctor, which is really a practicer of black magic and a Pharisee full of uncleanness and filth. All of this is made Jewish religious doctrine with full Luciferian knowledge of the Bible's laws against it. quote, thou shalt not lie with mankind, unquote. And the biblical verse Leviticus 18:22 is actually cited in the same Talmud section where sodomy with boys under 9 or baby girls under 3 is permitted. The full text of this verse states, quote, thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is an abomination, unquote. Small wonder that Christ denounced the Pharisees as nullifying the word of God and violating every concept of human decency. The Talmud today. After reciting the denunciations and condemnations of the Talmud down throughout the centuries, Rodkinson, in his introduction to the Talmud, states, quote, such was the past of the Talmud, which we hope will never be repeated. Now a glance at the end of the last century, at the beginning of this one. The colleges for the study of the Talmud are increasing almost in every place where Israel dwells. Sure, yeah, it's increasing where the true Israelites dwell. And this is what's bringing our country down. Especially in this country where millions are gathered for the funds of the two great colleges, the Hebrew Union College of Cincinnati and the Jewish Theological Seminary of the America in New York, in which the chief study is Talmud, the Talmud and its post-Talmudical literature. This was written early in the present century. Is what Rodkinson wrote true today? The answer is yes. Not only are the Hebrew Union College of Cincinnati and the Jewish Theological Seminary of America more active than ever, but a network of schools to teach the Talmud to young Jews now exists from coast to coast. For example, in the Chicago area, the Associated Talmud Torahs of Chicago oversees some of 57 schools where the Talmud is taught to young Jews, commencing with their tender years. If you are told by anyone that the Jewish Talmud is merely ancient history concerning Judaism, don't be fooled. The Talmud is present-day Judaism, and without it, so-called Judaism would not exist. That concludes that chapter. Ladies and gentlemen, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts? Are you equal with the Jews? Or are they superior to you? I'm telling you, every week we learn more and more. Praise be to Yahweh, the ever-living God. May he break the spell that is upon the true Israel of the Bible. May he break the spell upon the white race. And may you be blessed by his words. You've been listening to Saxon's Creed Radio Show. I'm David James, and until next time, study to show thyself approved.